Hello and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, July 15th, 2022. I'm your temporary, just for this week, host, Wayne McPhail. Thanks for tuning in. And don't worry, Brianne will be back next week when she returns from her underwater highland dancing summer camp or whatever she's doing. Anyway, Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. So if you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, this week on Rabble Radio, we dive into the world of natural, or green as it's sometimes called, burials. For many of us, talking about death isn't easy, let alone talking about what happens to your body once you've passed away. But what if your burial could help the environment? Since the 1990s, the natural burial movement has steadily gained momentum as more and more people are cottoning on to the idea. With a natural burial, the body is not exposed to any chemical embalming, and instead of a traditional casket, the body is wrapped in a shroud or buried in a biodegradable casket. Rather than rows of headstones on a manicured lawn, picture a meadow or woodland restored and protected in its natural ecosystem. In place of tombstones, imagine graves marked with a small stone, a native plant, or a communal dedication. Some Canadians admire the spiritual connection to the earth that a natural burial grants. Many also find peace of mind knowing that their burial will have a very small ecological footprint. Yet despite the enthusiasm for this burial alternative, there are shockingly few places in Canada to be buried naturally. Susan Greer, the executive director of the Natural Burial Association, speaks to Doreen Nickel about the organization's mission to make natural burial more accessible in Canada. Greer is not only the ED of the Natural Burial Association, she's a former funeral celebrant. She served on the board of the Green Burial Council in the United States and is a member of the Conservation Burial Alliance. Doreen Nickel is a social activist, freelance writer, and frequent contributor for Rabble.ca. In 2016, she won the Hamilton Independent Media Award for Social Justice and Human Rights. Here are Nickel and Greer in conversation. Take a listen.
How did you get introduced to this?
I was listening to the radio. It was 2018, and I heard about natural burial. And I think two things: that one, I'm comfortable with the idea of my own mortality, and I'm not comfortable with the future of the planet. So, you know, it was my aha moment. I just thought, this is the most incredible idea. So it's difficult to see how these natural burial grounds are thriving in the US and the UK, and they make so much sense. And it's just really hard in Canada. We have one public standalone natural burial ground, and that's in Salt Spring Island, British Columbia. And it's doing tremendously well. And it's on a farm. Behind the farm property, Kathy Valentine and her partner, Gavin Johnson, have taken 13 acres, and it's in the wooded area, the coastal Douglas fir ecosystem, full of ferns and tall, big trees. You can almost smell it looking at the pictures of it, you know, you can imagine. And that's where the natural burial area is. So it's beautiful. That's what people would like in Canada. We've done polls, and there's two kinds of natural burial grounds. There's a hybrid, which is when you create a natural section attached to a conventional burial. So it's like an acre or so. And there are some of those in Ontario and in other parts of the country. And then there's these standalones where you're enveloped in nature. And that's what people like, because that's the, well, people like both. I mean, some like the being close, but by and large, you know, we've done an Angus Reid poll that's shown us people really want the standalone natural burial ground. Then the idea is there's no, for most of them, there's either a very modest marker or there's a communal marker, like a boulder that's got all the names of the individuals that are at rest there. You know, the idea is that your legacy isn't that 4x8 area. Your legacy is that whole acreage that you're protecting in perpetuity. And what's, you know, the magic that's performed on that to make it a sanctuary for both the dead and the living? Like, what kind of native species are you bringing back? What kind of animals are going to return. You know, I hear lovely stories. Like there was a guy who runs a natural burial ground in Virginia, and he's saying, I hadn't seen quails for years. And then they're coming back. Or he hadn't seen the monarch butterflies, but they got a pollinator in their garden and they're coming back. So there's all these stories that are attached to the natural burial grounds.
Let's talk about the costs, the fees. There's 13% and 40% in Ontario. I understand that's a portion of the fee for the burial plot that's put aside so that in perpetuity, the grounds are taken care of. Is that right?
Yeah. So what happens in not all, but many provinces in the country, and there is a law in that if a cemetery is abandoned, i.e. the pioneer cemeteries or ones that just get full, the municipality must maintain responsibility of it. So for the municipalities, this is quite a line item for, you know, them, because they've got a lot of pioneer cemeteries. And think about it, you've got to, in the summertime, especially, you've got to mow every couple of weeks. You've got to clip around every tombstone. You've got to fix the tombstones. It's a high maintenance project. So in Ontario and several other provinces, every cemetery has to have what in Ontario is called a care and maintenance fund. And so every time a person buys a full body plot in Ontario, 40% of that has to go into the care and maintenance fund. So then the other fee is one that's extraordinarily punitive and really just in Ontario. If a new cemetery operator wants to open a natural burial ground, last year, they had to show that they had $100,000 in their CMF fund, the care and maintenance fund. And then in January of 2022, they raised that to $165,000. They raised it by 65%.
Is that just for natural burial, or is that for every?
That's for all cemeteries.
All cemeteries.
But the conventional cemeteries, if you're already in existence, you're grandfathered in.
Yeah.
So in essence, it's only going to be for new natural burial grounds, because natural burial grounds, they're not a line extension, you know, run by the corporate cemeteries, because there's all the different rules. Like we have 300 plots per acre, not 1,000 plots per acre. It's what's, you know, referred to as that triple bottom line. In essence, the people, it's like a calling that are starting these natural burial grounds. They're answering to the families and they're answering to Mother Nature. Corny as it sounds, like they're not driven to get into this business for the profit. So in essence, while it's not written anywhere, a barrier like that is a barrier that's going to have an impact on a natural burial ground, standalone natural burial ground. Yes. So what happened was I was, they're very supportive people in the natural burial movement. And I was phoning a natural burial ground in BC and hoping to ask some questions of somebody about this initial 165,000 and what happens in BC. And the fellow wasn't there. His mother answered the phone. And I said, oh yeah, I'm just phoning to ask about the initial fee. And this mother says, oh, the government, they take away money every time. I'm like, what do you mean? And she says, they take 25% every time has to go into this fund for the perpetuity fund. So the government doesn't officially take it. That was the wording she used. But it does go in. They insist that it goes into this fund, which they can't touch, right? Except for the interest. And I'm like, 25%? Wait a minute. We pay 40 in Ontario. And that's how I discovered this huge disparity from province to province. And then we phoned all the different provinces, and it's not easy. All the death, funerals, cemetery laws are so different in every province. It was the most extraordinary, difficult research project. And we had two volunteers double and triple check our facts. And so there's crazy stuff like in Alberta, you can't even open a private cemetery. They have zero. So the 40% in Ontario is zero in Alberta if you're buried in a municipal or religious cemetery. And it's 15%, because I think there is one of the chains like SCI or something is in Alberta. So there's other provinces that seem really reasonable. Like Nova Scotia has a 15% fee, and Saskatchewan, I believe, also 15%. And in the United States, that's what seems to be reasonable. Like 15% seems to be reasonable. Kathy Valentine, she wouldn't mind me sharing with you her the Salt Spring Island Natural Cemetery, has already got a very healthy 67,000 in its fund, and it only launched in 2020. And she pays, of course, the 25%, and she had to pay zero as the initial fee. So compare 165,000 to zero. And, you know, they were farmers, and Kathy was a yoga teacher. Like, this 165,000 is not readily available to the kind of people that want to start a natural burial ground. So yeah, that's a real barrier. And I think it's, you know, it's also a concern because it's anti-small business and it's anti-competitive. And it just isn't recognizing this new model that's just so, like, just so precious to people. You can't believe how much this resonates. If you've been to the homepage of our website, almost 1,900 people have written in saying, oh, may we love this idea. But most, I would say well over half, leave these stunningly beautiful comments about how much it resonates with them. It's huge. I mean, you know, one man saying, this is so important to me, I can't even put it in words. And they're so grateful for this. And it really, really resonates. And it's, we hear, you know, time and time again, like it's about giving back to nature, or it makes sense, or it, and, you know, lately it's funny, we've got a couple that are about, it takes away the creepiness, or it takes away the fear. And they get the cycle of life. You know, we are a death denying culture by and large. But what the funny thing about natural burial is that it actually is more healing, because you see that loved one in the middle of the forest, in the middle of that meadow. The families and friends participate in it. Is a much more ritualistic. They participate in luring their loved one, in covering the grave. And the people, the operators who run these natural burial grounds, they'll say that, you know, the family will come because their loved one liked nature. And then the operator will say, well, would you like to be involved lowering the casket and filling it in, and even decorating creating the bed in the bottom? And they're like, oh, no. But then they get there and they see, and they grab the shovel. You know, they always just have the shovels there because they know everybody's going to change their mind, and they want to participate. And, you know, one Catholic minister I heard speaking about natural burial, he said, you know, we have this way of looking at the world in which we're the prime animal, and that natural burial in a way kind of reminds us that, you know what, we're part of this huge web, and we're giving to the other animals, like the little eeny beeny insects and the other bigger animals, the deer and what have you, that will eat off the grasses that we're helping to save and protect, right? So it's fascinating in that regard. There is the whole small s spiritual element of it, but mostly it's about the environment, it's just saving, protecting the land.
If family members wanted to be buried close together, is that an option?
Yeah, every cemetery sets its own bylaws. Okay. So, and they, you can't get approved as a cemetery before you've shown whatever the provincial regulatory body is, the design for the where the plots are going to be, the layout of the plots. And so, yes, so a family could buy two plots. The soil is at its richest, about 3-4 feet underneath. And so there's not a double burial at a natural burial ground the way there is in conventional burial. So it would be side by side, because, you know, that just allows for the decomposition and the body giving back to the earth.
And I know readers are going to ask me, why isn't it 6 feet down?
Yeah, it's not needed. And people, I mean, there's three concerns that people have. Like, one is that scavengers are going to eat us. And that just doesn't bear out, like so many that are already buried naturally. And you don't hear about their bodies, you know, being pulled out by scavengers, because scavengers, really, there's a smell on it about 18 inches down, and the bodies are well below that. And it's just way too much work for them. They're more interested in what's on top of the soil. So there's not been an incident of a scavengers playing havoc on any of the natural burial grounds that we know of in the United States. And the second thing is, they think, well, is this legal? But of course it's legal, that it's always been around. It's just that the industry became commercialized. You know, it started in the Civil War when embalmers went to the battlegrounds and preserved the bodies so they could be returned home to the families. And then it kind of just took off from there. When you think of, you've got a living room, you have a room in your home called a living room. And then you've got this thing that used to be called a funeral parlor. It was because the dead used to lie out in the parlor, right? And so then that's why it became the funeral parlor. And then we had a living room. So over time, the cemeteries became commercialized. And then, you know, some of them are publicly traded. And the taking care of our dead fell into the hands of an industry, as opposed to with the family. But not exclusive. I mean, of course, there's still many families and many people that take this on themselves. The question is it legal? And then will scavengers eat us? And then the third question is about disease. Will disease spread? And again, there are already lots of bodies that are buried without being embalmed, and there is no spread of disease. There are regulations that every cemetery covers, whether it's natural or conventional, and the water table is far removed from the body. And by and large, diseases die when we die. They need us to be alive. And it's a different kind of bacteria that helps to decompose the body, is different than any diseases that may be in our body. And there's some exceptions to that, mad cow disease and Ebola. Those are exceptions to the rule. But by and large, diseases die when we die.
That land has to be designated for this.
Yes. Land has to be designated as cemetery land. You need to have municipal approval for it, and it is protected in perpetuity. And that's why it's difficult too. I mean, I do get the sense that a lot of municipalities would rather build a nuclear power plant than approve a cemetery, because that land is locked in forever. So that's the job of our organization to, you know, build awareness of the benefits of natural burial grounds, that they're like, in essence, like a park. Every municipality has in their planned saving green space. So this is kind of like a win-win. You're saving green space, which is going to be used. People visit it. There could be picnics there. There could be bird watching there, butterfly pollinators. There's lots of apiarists on natural burial grounds. So that, just view the cemetery as not something that's like an onerous line item on the municipal ledger, but something that is really valued by the community and felt like something where the community gets involved, volunteering in one way or the other way.
Yeah. And also the cost of maintenance for you would be much, much lower.
Well, that's the thing that we tried to argue, is that, because we did meet with the government in 2020 and it didn't go well at all. Right after our presentation, they said that, interest in natural burial is anecdotal. And so, you know, one, we've been trying to spread the word so we can say to the government, no, it's really real. I mean, if you think about on social media, we have over 6,000 followers on social media. Now, how many people are going to follow a page that has anything to do with death, right? In this death denying culture. So that alone says to me, this resonates with so many people, and the engagement is just so positive. So I think we've got to prove to the government that no, this really resonates, and that it doesn't make sense that people go through life, so many of us, making decisions to drink out of a, you know, glass, not a plastic bottle, to walk or bike or take the subway instead of driving. And then our last act is, you know, burping carbon into the atmosphere. One of the interesting things is that people think that cremation is eco-friendly. And it's when we tell people, and we try to do this very, very gently, because we recognize that there are some faiths that practice cremation, and it is less expensive than conventional burial. But it has a reputation for being eco-friendly, because of course it is, relative to conventional burial, but it uses about each body. I mean, you're burning at about 800, 900 degrees Celsius for, you know, 1 to 3 hours. So that takes about 2 SUV size tanks of gas. And that's so fossil fuel, and that's carbon going into the atmosphere. And if the incinerators don't have the very, very expensive filter, then you've got a lot more of the toxins going up into the atmosphere. So, you know, mercury and nitrogen oxide and other undesirable toxins going into the atmosphere. So it's really, you know, it's not good for the environment.
What else would you like readers to know about? Is there anything that we haven't talked about?
You know, it's funny. I think that when we, the volunteers that really embrace this idea, talk to others about it, there's a small percentage, I'm going to guess like 1-2%, they'll go, this is weird, this is yucky. But by and large, people are like, holy cow, this is such a good idea. Or I've always cared about the environment. How could I have not known about this? So I think if it's something that resonates with your readers, talk about it. Visit our website. We have so much information on natural burial, and that information applies whether you're in Ontario or not. And also, if you have any relationship with the funeral home, ask at the funeral home, because there's the odd, lovely funeral director or funeral home that embraces this and recognizes that this is something that really resonates with people. But by and large, it's an industry that's very traditional and does not change easily, and they're not embracing natural burial. So but they will if everybody's knocking at their door saying, we'd like a natural burial. And so I think every province has to look and see if they're accommodating the different needs at end of life that are coming down the pipeline. But I think it's just spreading the word is the most important thing. If you like this idea, tell 10 more people about this idea and ask them to tell 10 more people about this idea.
Thanks so much, Susan. I'm glad we
Thank you, Doreen.
Thanks.
Take care.
That was Doreen Nichol and Susan Greer, Executive Director of the Natural Burial Association, in conversation. If you'd like to learn more about natural or green burials, visit naturalburialassociation.ca. Thanks so much for that, Doreen and Susan. Now we come to a segment of the show called In Case You Missed It, and for that I'll pass it over to the Rabble editor, Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Wayne. This week on the site, national politics reporter Stephen Wentzel covered how conservative leadership candidate Pierre Poilievre encouraged personal attacks against Global News journalist Rachel Gilmore. Poilievre unleashed his social media followers against Gilmore after she asked him about his association with far-right organizations such as those behind the so-called Freedom Convoy. Wentzel writes, "What makes Poilievre's attacks on Gilmore all the more disturbing is that this isn't a case of a quarrel between a politician and a reporter. It is about an opportunistic electoral contender both enabling and endorsing a community of extremists in their harassment of a journalist who is just asking questions." In labor news, Rabble labor reporter Gabriela Kaluge-Kasuga covered the impending expiration of COVID-19 sick days in Ontario. Introduced early in the pandemic, these paid sick days were designed to compensate workers who were out sick with COVID, needed to self-isolate, or needed time off to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. These sick days are scheduled to expire at the end of July. Yolanda McLean, Secretary-Treasurer for the Ontario Section of the Canadian Union of Public Employees, told Rabble that without these paid sick days, employees will have to choose between putting food on the table and caring for their health and the health of those around them. McLean asked, "How do you choose between necessities and necessities?" CUPE, along with a range of other labor unions, is calling on the province to legislate 10 paid sick days as a minimum standard. According to the Ontario Federation of Labor President Patty Coates, workers with paid sick days are 28% less likely to be injured on the job. Also on the site this week, Rabble covered rock legend Roger Waters' rally with McGill students on Thursday in support of Palestine. In March, 71% of student union members voted for a Palestine solidarity policy, committing the Student Society of McGill University to supporting the people of Palestine. Shortly after, McGill's administration threatened to terminate its memorandum of agreement with the student union, which regulates fees and other matters between them and the university. The school administration claimed the Palestine solidarity policy created a culture of ostracization and disrespect due to students' identity, religious, or political beliefs. The resolution, however, does not mention religion or ethnicity. Waters is a supporter of the Boycott, Divest, and Sanctions movement known as BDS, which seeks to use economic incentives to secure what they believe is fair treatment for the Palestinian people from the nation of Israel. The huge backlash, if you mentioned the word apartheid 10 years ago, you couldn't mention the word ever, completely forbidden. We have made huge progress and we are going to reach a tipping point, Waters said in May of last year. Finally, columnist Kathy Crowe is calling on the City of Toronto to focus on bread for the people over circuses in the wake of Toronto being named a host city for the 2026 FIFA Men's World Cup. In her column, Crowe points out that events like the World Cup or the Olympics have costs that are never fully recuperated by host cities. That spending could be used instead to support important social programs like homeless shelters and food banks. Crowe writes, "To contemplate a sport mega event while not addressing spending for the social good of all is corrupt. It's even worse knowing that Toronto has some major pre-existing issues with its priorities and financial allocations." On July 12th, City of Toronto Administration filed a report with the Executive Committee detailing that the bill for hosting the 2026 World Cup was already growing. The price tag currently stands at $300 million, which is already a 3.4% increase from projections made in April of this year. You can catch all of those stories and much, much more on Rabble.ca.
That's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, and share Rabble Radio with your friends. It just takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. And follow us on social media across channels at RabbleCA. If you have feedback for the show, opinions, ideas, stories you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca and to Carl Nuremberg for supplying the music for this episode. Finally, thank you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. Next week, Brianne will return. I'm Wayne McPhail, just filling in this week. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.